Wrestling Observer Radio, Garrett and Dave here on a Friday. SummerSlam is this weekend. Mm-hmm. Does it feel like a big show this weekend to you?
Well, it's two. I think so. I think it feels somewhat big, not as big as some of them, but I think they got three big it feels like three big matches, which would be the Cody and Punk, Roman Reigns and Seth, and Obafemi and Brock. And the rest, it's matches on a card that most will be good, some won't be, some silliness. Six matches, probably 3.5 hour shows, I'm going to guess. A lot of commercials. big crowd. They'll end up I think they were 33 plus and 35 plus, the big one being Saturday. So they'll get, in the next day and two, they'll get it up a little bit more. It'll be fine on the screen. Obviously nowhere close to sold out, but I don't think anyone expected it to actually be anywhere near sold out for this one. They had a discount some, there's probably some comps out. Maybe a lot of cops out, but it's all right. It's okay. It's not a failure or anything.
What about tickets for SmackDown?
Tonight?
Yeah.
In Green Bay? Yeah, it was last I looked, which was when I woke up, it was 4,300, but the Resch Center in Green Bay is pretty small. Mm. So, it's going to be fairly full, but Green Bay is not a big, it's not a big capacity building or anything like that. But I think that number, for WWE SmackDown, probably not being sold out in advance like it normally would be in that building, I guess that's a disappointment, but it's a reality. I mean, it's not as hot as a year ago or 2 years ago. That's the reality. It's not dead. It's not dying, but it's not as hot as it once was. And I think that there's been a lot of people taking cover. I didn't see a lot of the Levesque stuff this week. So I've only read the stuff. So I haven't really, and when I read it, it just reads like the stuff I always read. So I don't really, it's almost like I don't really like focus on it or pay that much attention to it because it's the same stuff he always says. But it feels like people were more negative towards him, but maybe I'm in a bad circle to view that. I don't know.
I think the thing that I was kind of gobsmacked that he said was he was talking about the passion and why people do this, and then he started talking about the fans getting upset at the writing or the creative instead of putting their passion towards. I think he meant
hate the bad guys. Don't hate the guys who write the script for the bad guys. We know too much.
And because he did the whole "it's still real to me" thing, right? He did that whole spiel, and I get it.
It's hard to be still real to me when they're putting the stuff out in the form that they do, and it's not. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I just say this. I do think it's funny when I read people and they go like, people are afraid to be heels. Heels don't get heat like they used to. And there's truth to that. But it's a different era and people watch for different reasons now. It is entertainment. That is the end result of what Vince, tried to start, 44 years ago. And the thing is, it's like, I don't think he fully grasped where it goes because then you start lamenting the stuff that's lost, but it's lost because things happen. Number one, the audience is going to get smarter. That's just how it is. And this, the nature of the world is such, but so they're going to watch ways. The key is are they still following? Are they still going? Yeah, they are, but not as much as a couple of years ago. But we just had a boom period, and I think people lose sight. I mean, because the same people were saying the same things in the late 90s when we had a giant boom period. Heels can't be heels and people know too much and people are focused too much on the backstage and not enough on TV and things like that. And it's like, that's just how it's always going to be going forward. There's always going to be those complaints. It's never going to be what it was because it's way more popular this way. you know, as far as like ticket sales and things like that to the masses, it's, you know, now, because there's so many options, do as many people watch on television before? No. And that's not going to change either. And that's the same thing. Look, that's the same thing in Mexico. That's the same thing in Japan. You know, it's just as there's way, way, way more options, you can't be comparing flat numbers, not just for wrestling, but for anything on TV other than the NFL, pretty much.
Okay, but here's the
Or something that just gets hot, like, you know, like the WNBA is hotter than it's ever been. So therefore, yes, you can compare their numbers with 20 years ago. But, you know, other things, not so much.
Okay, but here's the real flaw in that statement. They have this show called WWE Unreal.
Yeah.
Where they give producers and creative, like, they give you insight into it. And then they tell you that the producers are the ones that are calling all these moves and these great matches that you love.
Yep.
You can't say, well, you can't have an opinion on the writing stuff and you need to get behind the wrestlers when you're showing that same fan base how it all works. And the fans go, oh, well, we knew the writer. We knew there was creative piece, but we didn't know it was to this level. And so that's why I don't understand some of his commentary, because it kind of butts up against their product and the way that they actually do their product.
You're completely right. You can't have it both ways. You can't, and you can't have it the way it was before, even without WWE Unreal really didn't change anything for most people. It's like, they got a glimpse more inside than they had before. And some of that's worked anyway, but it's like they've known, you know, for a long, long time, and people being mad at bookers has happened for, you know, 30 plus years. And it's part of being a booker. I think one of the things that's different now with before is that, and I think that's sort of the nature of social media, in the sense of before, when people got mad at the booker, it was usually based on tangible stuff. I keep going to the building. The crowd is smaller. What are they doing wrong? Mm-hmm. Now it's like, I like this. I don't like that. I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this. And I mean, his thing of, you know, of like, everybody now wants to fantasy book, and you're never going to give what the people want a fantasy book, because number one, everyone's different. And number two, it's never going to perfectly line up, and you get mad when they don't line up with your fantasy booking. There is some of that. There is some of that. It's like with me, like I have my ideas of where things should go and things like that. If it doesn't work out, if it doesn't go that way, I don't care if the numbers are going up or staying the same. And if they're going down and I like it, I don't really care either, because my job is to figure out, you know, is it positive or negative? And if it's not exactly how I would do it, then it's my job then to learn. Now, I know it's not everyone else's job, you know, as a listener, you know, you can like whatever you like, and, you know, that's fine. You know, and if you, what you like is not working business-wise, that's not telling you you're wrong in what you like and what you don't like. I'm just saying that they're going to make their decisions based on business, not on what you like or what I like. Or I think one of the things that they do is they, it comes across everywhere, is that sometimes they will use the business as their crutch to ignore, but very often they don't. You know, they'll say it, but they don't. I mean, I can tell you from people who make changes based on social media that aren't necessarily the best business changes, but they do it because they read that heat all the time, and it subconsciously tends to make changes. And therefore, when that happens, which happens all the time, you start having storylines that aren't fully logical, or things that start and don't fully finish, and pushes that stop, you know, because there's their feeling that, hey, maybe it's not working. Especially because so much of it now, like we can watch and see the ups and downs, but not the how each individual contributes or doesn't contribute. And most individuals don't contribute to it one way or the other. Really, the only ones that are going to contribute to it in any meaningful way are a few. You know, and they're the ones who, in reality, end up getting most of the heat, or, and not necessarily most of the praise, but they'll get most of the heat when if things are leveling off or going down, you're going to blame creative. Yes. And you're going to blame the guys on top. Yes. And, you know, in a sense, that's probably fair because that's what's going to, you know, that's what it's about. Now, if things are going up and you're still blaming them, it's like, well, you know, you got to understand that you're not the entire world. And they're making decisions based on what they perceive the entire world is doing. And sometimes they're going to be right and sometimes they're going to be wrong, you know. And sometimes they go into holes and sometimes they're a little slow on the draw because of the pressure of, you know, it's the same thing from, it's not as bad as decades ago. Decades ago, because it was such a hand-to-mouth business, which it certainly is not anymore, you know, there was pressure on, we got to draw Friday. And it causes you to always go with proven commodities long, for longer and longer. But they also knew that when it starts going down, they're feeling it, you know, they're feeling it personally. So we got to get somebody new into the territory type of a thing. And now you don't feel it. It's just a bunch of numbers on a spreadsheet, you know, with that, you know, might make a few thousand dollars difference or tens of thousands or dollars difference in a multi-million dollar business. So, you know, there becomes a thing of playing it safe, especially when TV ratings are so important as compared to just the draw, you know, with TV ratings, you know, you always go, well, who's drawing the TV ratings? And the problem is when it comes to the TV ratings is that is probably going to lag behind the draw and the crowd reactions, because people will watch, the masses will watch on TV stuff that they are familiar with. And if somebody gets really, really hot, you know, it may take a year after they're hot before you really start making a difference in the ratings. But when your lifeblood is the ratings, it kind of encourages you to, as you do each week of like, well, we can't put the wrong guy in the wrong spot because they're not ready for him in a main event spot. But if you keep the same guys too long, which has been a big complaint of WWE and a valid one, you know, it does lead to stagnation, and that never works in the long run either. You know, you always have to have, you know, influx of new talents. Oh, you've got to always have people on the chase and on the rise, and you can't make every single one of them world champion. But if you cut them off one after the other, and no one gets to rise, or one guy gets to rise, but the rest don't, you're going to, you'll run into trouble. You know what I mean? And can be quick too. You know, I mean, WCW kind of proved that one.
You know, they have a very vocal fan base, and when they're going hot, it is very positive. And, when they're going maybe not as hot, you know, it can be pretty negative. And I think there's an, overpromise and underdeliver aspect to the product right now. But I don't, like, you know, I see people saying, oh, this is the worst, the product's, I'm like, no way.
Like, I know. It's obviously. it's not the best it's ever been, at all. But the idea that it's, you know, like, you know, it was a pretty flat, sometimes down product, really, you know, from 2002 to really what, coming out of the pandemic, right? 2021, 2022 is when it really picked up. So, and some of those periods were dire, you know, in the 90s, freaking 92 to 95, those were dire.
Like 95, I literally stopped. I was in college, but I just stopped watching for like a year and a half. And it was Austin and Rock and DX to an extent that did bring me back.
Yeah.
But yeah, like if you go back to like 1995, and then I'll talk to other people who that was their childhood, and they're like, oh, it's so great. And I was like, oh my gosh, it literally drove me away from watching.
Yeah. 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 Well, the thing is that period drove a lot of people away from watching. You know, it's like if it only drove you away, but business was through the roof, then that's fine. But, you know, I remember that was like for me covering that, I consider those years like the dark ages. I mean, it's just wrestling was just so down, and, you know, it led to people taking chances and trying to do new things because the old things weren't working. And the chances and the changes led to, you know, that boom period that came in the late 90s. And we haven't had a real series of creative changes since then, I think. I mean, we've had, you know, we've had a different style of wrestling, you know, but that, which is always one of the things. But I mean, as far as, and, you know, I mean, and different mentality, certainly completely different mentality of product itself, but the format, I mean, the big thing really, if you, you know, that got people out of the dead thing was Paul Heyman being what he was with Sabu and those guys in ECW, and Eric Bischoff with his ideas on Nitro, you know, which WWE sort of wanted to do with Raw, but Eric went way further and did it way better until WWE came back and did it better than Eric. But those were the big things. And the format of TV still, you know, largely a large part based on Nitro. I mean, it's completely different now. I mean, you certainly don't have the entertainment stuff. You don't have as much risque stuff because the networks won't let you do it. You have a much better wrestling. I mean, if you watched some of those shows, you know, both in both things with the 2 minute matches and the DQs and all the stuff that they did. And then the stuff at the end where we got to go right when the thing starts and all that. And it's like, that wouldn't fly today. It just wouldn't fly. People would be complaining too much and you couldn't get away with it. And now, you know, so that, you know, you have to adjust.
So obviously Sunday, they usually save their biggest match for Sunday, but I feel like Saturday, for the most part, people, that's the show that people are looking most forward to.
Well, I agree. I think that, again, you know, from everything that I see, the hottest thing is for a while has been Lesnar and Obafemi. I think that they counted on Sun, you know, Roman and Seth Rollins being really big because they have, you know, Roman is the guy, you know, in their minds, he is the guy. So he should be the biggest. And he's good at what he does. But yeah, I don't feel it's the biggest. Punk and Cody is, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you have three big title programs, which is Seth and Roman, Punk and Cody, and Omega and Ospreay. And they're all six super baby faces, right? So you got to sort of go with an, you know, you can go straight. You can go with an edge here. You can try to use personal issues to build the rivalry while both stay sort of in their position, although one is sort of more, a little bit heelish because you got to do it for the thing. You got different ways of doing it, but it's interesting. We could look at that and go like, there aren't hot heels, but there is, you know, MJF's a hot heel, but he's, and that's all the whole year in AEW was chasing MJF, and now it's a different thing. And now, you know, different people are going to be, you know, and they're trying to get different heels in the spotlight and make them and things like that. Kevin Knight, Fletcher, you know, so, and with WWE, man, I don't see like almost everyone's like kind of baby face-ish. You know, it's like that six man tag, you know, with Jacob and Royce Keys and everybody. They're, the fans cheer all of them, you know, and even though like I watch it and the Jacob team does the heel stuff, but Jacob always gets cheered. And the Usos, they all want to do the yeet with the entrance and everything. Even though they're acting more heelish, they want those entrances. So it's like there's a, it feels like right now just a lot of baby faces are over. And, but the tricks to be the heel from the past, you know, so many of those things, I don't know if they work as well with this kind of a thing, because they want you to, you know, they want you to like everyone, and everyone's, you know, they're all geniuses mapping out this incredible product that you see and all that. And it makes it hard for people to be heels, because, you know, even if they're out there being heels, at the end of the day, people are going to go like, oh, well, it's the,
It's the writers who are writing these lines. And if I don't like these lines, instead of having heat on the guy for the lines, I have heat on the company for scripting the lines. And so, and you can't put that back in the bottle. People know too much.
You know, it's an interesting comparison. I was thinking about this when I watched the Dynamite promo with Omega and Ospreay, is that the appeal, at least if you watch the WWE television, what they believe the appeal to set up Cody and Seth and to set up, I'm sorry, Roman and Seth and Cody and Punk were the face-off promos.
Mm-hmm.
And we got many of them in the build-up to these matches.
Yeah, many. Maybe too many.
Yeah, I think too many. And then I watched the Ospreay and Omega, and I was like, that one blew the doors off of all of those other ones from WWE, which,
yeah,
if you think about it, like Punk and Cody and Roman are seen as promo guys, and Omega and Ospreay, you know, are seen a little bit differently, but they blew the doors off of those promos, I thought.
Yeah. You know what the thing is it's funny because one of the complaints I see is people about shooty promos and things like that. And it's like, I think that's what you want. I think you want more realism. The thing is, and it's like, I will say this for Ospreay, just as an example, is like, because he doesn't do in his promos what WWE guys do, you know what I mean? It's so much the passion takes over, right? It's not really smooth and everything like that, but it feels more real to me. That's like way more effective than the real scripted and the new, the Roman stuff. I mean, it's funny, like Roman is actually, like, when he's out there, he's actually like a phenomenal performer in facially playing his role at all times, the way he comports himself, the way he stands, like all of those things, the way he delivers the lines, he's really phenomenal. But when I watch it, it's like, I admire that he can go out there and stand there for minutes on end and not say a thing, and the place goes crazy, and he can just use his face, you know, to make them go up and down. It's really amazing. But the other thing is, when I watched, like, on Monday night, and that thing is, I see it every week, and while I'm impressed with it, and I think it's great, it does bore me. You know, it's like, I know the gimmick. I know how you do it. You're great. You're great. You're fantastic. But I'm bored. With Ospreay and Omega, it was two guys who were, just passion. I mean, Kenny's just in his zone, you know, and I think that, like, Rollins thinks he's in a zone like that, but he's only 75% there, okay? You know, when he was talking about, like, you know, I mean, I know it's character, I'm the best there's ever been, blah, blah, blah. But I think he thinks that, like, you know, I really got this thing down, and he's almost there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not like it's funny when he said that, because it was kind of like, you know, the first reactions is like, oh God, do you really believe this? And then I thought, well, you know, he probably has people blowing smoke up his ass, and he probably believes and thinks that everybody else in the minor leagues. And it's like, I'm watching this, and it's like, you know, as a performer, you know, on the promos, which he doesn't get the credit for, it's like Omega's kind of blowing you away right now. You know, I mean, in that role, you know, and I think it's just because they are different. They are not cookie cutter. And I think it's time for different. I think that the Ospreay Omega thing, and maybe if I saw, like, nothing but that over and over and over again, you know, too much of that would be a negative and a same thing. But right now, like, I like the real passion that I can believe in from the promos. And I get some of that with WWE, but it's careful. And with AEW, it's just thrown right in your face. And I think that's why that one stood out. There was something that somebody put, like, a promo of, it was Nick Bockwinkel and Terry Funk from you know, I don't even know what year. It had to be the '80s, right? And they were doing a promo talking about how, you know, we're real world champions. We've done this, blah, blah, blah. It's not like all the steroid guys. So obviously the word already started, right? And I'm just thinking like, and they're both great on this promo, but they're talking over each other. They're not, you know what I mean? It's like I'm watching going like, if this was today, number one, and these are like Nick and Terry are like two of the greatest promos of all time. Two of the greatest wrestlers of all time, two of the smartest guys of all time, too. And they're talking over each other, but that's actually more real. They're saying stuff that like, oh, man, you should never be knocking the opposition. And they couldn't be knocking it more when you throw it steroids because you know what that was aimed at. And aimed at the whole other company. And it's like, you know, you're trying to shoot back. Because at the time, you know, obviously they were not the number one organization in the country. And that was their way of trying to say, hey, you know, we don't have to rely on steroids. We rely on our wrestling and we have history and heritage and blah, blah, blah. And this is our thing. If they did it today, people would go, that's bad taste. Oh, my God, they're talking all over each other. You know what I mean? It's not smooth. And it's like, yeah, those were the best guys, you know, and it's like it wasn't so scripted. But when those guys said what they said, I'm going like, oh, you know, they believe it. And that's their answer to, hey, we're number two in this fight. But this is our answer. You know, we're not them. And then we had this period for years and years and years and years and years that every opposition wanted to be them, just a junior version. And now we have a period where the opposition doesn't want to be them. And people who know only one thing think that it must be wrong. It's like there's a thousand ways to do it. And WWE way is one of them. And there's many others. And if you don't do it WWE way, that doesn't make you wrong. You have to figure out a way to capture. But if AEW was WWE, they would fail because they're not as good as WWE at being WWE. They have to go their own path in their own direction. That means a different product, you know, and everybody else, you know, sort of leaned into we're wrestling, but then they would do all the gimmicks and AEW does to an extent too, but not as much as all the other guys who tried to fight Vince for decades by doing Vince badly. These guys, for the most part, like, yeah, they do some of that stuff, but they really are out there. Like, you know, if you watch the TVs, the Wednesday and Thursday, like every match is great. That's their fight. You know, is it the perfect thing? Is it the be all and end all? No. But it's not what WWE is doing, and it is a total different product in so many ways. It's like, you know, if you like one, you may not like the other, and but at least they're not the same, you know. Mm-hmm. And then so it's like, and I think that's why they've been the most effective, you know, since Bischoff, you know. But Bischoff, you know, Bischoff in the fight, Bischoff used. There were so many big, big, big stars of the 80s that were older, you know, and we got, you know, them, but they were bigger stars. Those 80 stars were so big. Okay. And Bischoff could revitalize them in the 90s in a new environment and things like that. And, you know, get mileage out of it. Whereas like in AEW, they had no Hulk Hogan. They had no Randy Savage. They had no Ric Flair. They had Moxley. They had Jericho. They had, you know, Omega, but they weren't the names that were giant on TV the decade before. They were, you know, Moxley was a star for sure. Omega was a big, big star to a small group of hardcore fans, but that was their nucleus was not bringing in the Hulk Hogan, you know, and this has been, and again, one of the things is Hulk Hogan was such an absolute complete phenomenon, like Rock and Austin, but AEW never got Rock and they never got Austin. They never could. They never got Cena. They never could. We won't get Roman Reigns either. So they can't do what WCW did to compete. And with WCW to compete, the reality is only lasted a couple of years anyway, because those guys got old and they didn't know how to make new stars. They just knew how to take stars that were big on television a decade earlier and they were going to get old. Whereas like with AEW, one of the positives that I see now is every TV show, like look at the guys that were on the TV the last couple of days. 3 years ago, how many of them were stars? You know, so many of them weren't, but you know, so it's evolving. They're making new people. Who was Kevin Knight 3 years ago? Who was Fletcher 3 years? Fletcher was guy losing on TV that people were complaining. Why are they giving him 12 minutes? They should be beating him in four, you know? And it's like, well, maybe they think there's something to him. And now, you know, he's going to be the best guy in the business, except for maybe MJF going forward. As far as if you're looking at all these young guys, most complete guys, you know?
So I was thinking about this, because when you talked about the Connor number for Paramount, I don't want to say that it was low or whatever, but I just assumed that because it was Connor, that people were going to come back in droves and watch the show. So I was kind of disappointed.
It did a good number. I mean, compared to Khabib, but that's not, you know, we've moved on too. We know he's washed up.
But what I was wondering is, because I saw a lot of feedback, like the week of the show, that was very negative on him. It was like,
yeah,
you know,
that hurt you.
They were antagonizing the people who were letting him on their shows, like, you know, Ariel and the talk shows that he did. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, okay, like the audience is, they don't really believe that he's the big star as much anymore, but also they're seeing through his, you know, the things that he's done in his past, and they're saying, okay, this guy's not worth it to us anymore. Some of it is he's also past his prime. And I was trying to think of, because the Ryan Garcia thing that was on Raw, mm-hmm. like how much, what's the risk versus the value of having him on that show? I knew why he was on it. TKO is promoting.
They have to promote his fight. They want to promote his fight. Number two, in their minds, he's on their team and he's a big star, so we want to use him. You know, it's not even just to promote the fights. I think they think that we put him on and it's like, oh, it's like a big celebrity on the show. I think they overestimated the sports celebrity of Garcia to a degree. And, you know, and it's the same thing with Yachty, right? You know, like I've been in the building when Yachty is there. It's like, I know who he is. I know he's a star. I also know to these fans, he's just a guy that takes up space. They don't see him as a big star. They didn't really see Jelly Roll as nearly as big a star. You were in San Jose. Was he as big as when Mr. T or you know, the yeah, guys when they would bring those stars in that really meant something, or, you know, and he's a big star and everyone knows who he is, but it's like, you know, I think that that's one of their flaws, is the feeling that we have this guy. I think the whole star system today, it's so much harder because everything's so much more diluted than when we were kids. But these guys who are in charge, you got to remember, like, they're older than you. They're a little younger than me, or some of them are my age. And it's like, they grew up with a certain star thing, not realizing that to the public today, there are some stars that are absolutely enormous, gigantic, right? You know, Taylor Swift, right? And you can see when she was at football games, how big the ratings got, right? But there's not that many. And a lot of them that would have been, you know, like if wrestling had them in the 80s, I mean, Cyndi Lauper wasn't a giant, giant, giant star, but she changed the game because she was a big enough star, you know, whereas someone of that level now, maybe yes, maybe no, I don't know. But I don't, and also it's been done before. And it's, I think that's another part of it too, is that we've seen the stars in wrestling. It's not a new gimmick. And so many of the people now, it's like, if we wanted to see Jelly Roll, we'd watch a Jelly Roll video. We watch wrestling because we want to see wrestlers. And I'm not saying stars shouldn't be involved from time to time, but maybe not in like the world title program at WrestleMania. Maybe there it's like, we want to kind of see our guys as the stars, and not like, oh, they're stars because Jelly Roll and Pat McAfee are standing there. And also with Pat, you know, I mean, the thing is that number one, they all like Pat. Number two, he actually is a big ESPN star. And they live in that ESPN world. And I'm not sure how many of their consumers live in that ESPN world. Because I think one of the things that's also different to me, super, super, super different from the 80s and even more the 70s, is that then most wrestling fans were sports fans. and somewhat sports. What's the word I'm looking for? Not savvy, but close. What's the word? I don't even know the word I'm looking for, but they're somewhat sports oriented, right? And you know, there's kind of like a veil of sports around wrestling, even though it's not really a sport. Now, I think that while there certainly are NFL fans and everything, certainly, obviously, that watch wrestling, I also think that there's a large portion of the fan base that is so completely not sports savvy, but the people in charge of TKO and even Tony, you know, they're sports guys. So in their world, you know, the sports thing is much bigger. And with a lot of the fans, it's like, I don't get this. I don't get this tournament. Well, they do it in sports. I don't watch sports. I know what you're talking about. You know, whereas in the 70s, if they did that and compared it to sports, it'd be like, you know, there'd be no discussion. That's exactly. Oh, yeah, we're doing this. This is similar to blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they do
it. I actually find, and you mentioned this in the newsletter about how adding Moxley to this story, some people don't like the aspect that there's a third person because it's not as easy to predict, I guess.
It's way more depth to story than I expected. And in the end, you know, they have their story where it, like, you know, the Saturday, you know, Wednesday show, I should say. Wednesday show was the show as kind of the reveal. Like, okay, this is where we are. And this is why we did all of this. You know, all the stuff that maybe people didn't really get. Well, now it's all tied in. This is why Will did this. You know, after months of going like, why is Will doing this? And you kind of get his neck's hurt and they're teaching him bridges and, you know, whatever. It's a storyline, right? Mm-hmm. They're teaching him he's got to go for the kill when he gets the chance to go for the kill. Maybe he's too nice. Then at the end, you know, he fails in that. Now he's got to, you know, I mean, it's like Will lost to you know, Mark Davis, and he lost to Moxley. And it's like, in traditional build, I mean, this guy run through everyone. Why is he going 6 minutes with people? Why he should be to meet him in two? You know, it's like, it's not this. They're telling a completely different, more depth story. Is it better or worse? I don't know. But I mean, as far as like the guys out there, when they're doing it, they're challenging themselves. It's unproven. It's a risk, but it's different. And, you know, like, and if you don't like it or you don't get it, or you don't want to spend that much time thinking about your wrestling, you want it presented much easier. It's a miss, right?
Well, here's the reason why I brought it up. Cause it leans a little bit more to me, like to comic books, like movies, like that kind of storytelling where you do have to think a little bit about where things are going. And sometimes pro wrestling, they want you to like not be confused in any way. Like this is what
that's WWE.
Right. And so it's a little bit different in that aspect, but that's the part that I like about it, because I was like, oh, like, cause we were watching Redemption together and I sat there and I was watching this Kenny Omega and Kevin Knight match. And in my head, I was like, Omega's about to make this dude. He wants to prove people wrong that this was the wrong main event for this show. And I'm watching this match and I'm like, he's just handing this dude his ass like the whole match. And then when you see it play out and then it makes sense. And I was like, oh, okay. So, and I, you know, I did a show the other day after Redemption with Jeremy. And I was like, my mentality going into this match was that it was going to happen this one way. So when it didn't, I had to kind of readjust my expectation and go, oh, this is what they're doing. Sometimes people do not want to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because you and I were in agreement, you know, and we, you know, I, what we thought that match was going to be. And as it's going on, we were talking about, this is not the match we thought it was going to be, but it was an amazing performance by Kenny Omega in that match.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's like, I'm watching this and it's like, and I really, you know, it's one of the things, and I saw the same thing live with the Zach match. It's like, Kenny Omega, like when I think of Kenny Omega now, I've actually thought about this a lot lately. And that is the Kenny Omega from years ago and the Kenny Omega since the Gabe Kidd match are two completely different wrestlers. They're both phenomenal wrestlers, but they're absolutely different. And I think a lot of people don't, some people want this Kenny Omega to be that Kenny Omega, and he can't. It's impossible. Okay. It's not going to happen. And then they get mad at this Kenny Omega. This Kenny Omega is like, you know, he's like Brett and Terry Funk, and some people are going to get really mad, but he's really a lot like Terry Funk. Especially if, you know, and again, I knew Terry Funk at the same stage when Terry Funk physically could not do what he could do when he was younger, but was still good enough to be the best heel in wrestling. And every single thing he did in the, in a match was borderline genius, you know, as, and everything like that. And with Omega, it's like, there's so much thought put into what he does. I mean, when I watched, like, again, watching the Zach match, I was just like, well, this guy in so different from 5 years ago when I would watch Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, right? Where, you know, it's just like, athletically, they're just so far above everyone. And now it's like, it's not athletically far above everyone, but as a performer, like, you know, as great as Ospreay is, and he is, you know, as far as a depth performer, and Ospreay's gotten so much better this year too, which is another one. I think he's better, more gripping, and not quite as athletic as he was before the injury. I think that, and it's probably the similar reason to Omega, that he has to think in different ways. But Omega, I just think, you know, has just like his matches this year in particular, in almost every case, it's like, they're real classics in a different way than they were before.
Yeah. So we might as well move along to Collision, which happened last night. I did not see the show, but I saw a lot of the news coming out of it. They made the card for Grand Slam Mexico, and I was disappointed to not see an Omega match on there. I don't know what that means. There are really good matches on that show, but what did you think about Omega not having a title match on it?
I don't know. I hope he's there just to do a follow-up in some form with Ospreay, you know, at the end of the match. He doesn't have to wrestle on the show. And honestly, I don't know that it's necessary for him to even do matches on TV right now as world champion, maybe one. And maybe Mexico is the place to do it. But I mean, look, they got, was it eight matches? And they're, it's eight matches, and it's not like eight matches with 2 3-minute matches in there. It's like eight real matches. So, I mean, as a card, you know, I think they got a lot of guys on the card, and it's going to be a lot of great wrestling. I know that, like, from the fans there, they are getting Adam Copeland. You know, the two ones they wanted were Adam Copeland because he's never been there, and Omega because he's never been in Arena Mexico. So they're getting one of them in a match, and I hope they get the other one just there in some role. But, you know, I mean, when the card was done, it's kind of an amazing card. I mean, there's a part of me going like, man, I wish they had, you know, more CMLL regulars. But guess what? You know, the fans that are going, like, they see those guys every week. I don't think that they necessarily need to see, you know, Neon, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Or mm-hmm. Templario. I mean, it's like, I think it'd be really cool, like, on American TV to see those guys that I watch every week, but on American TV, and American fans get to see him. But, you know, he's building up his biggest show of the year. Last year, you know, it was, you know, I guess it was similar, but he's building up his biggest show of the year, and he's going to use the guys. At least he's got Mystico on, so you get that one. And that's all you need yeah. is the one authentic superstar flavor, the Mystico ring entrance, the Mystico twirl arounds, and the La Mystica at the end. You really want that on the show. So that's, he's got that. You got that flavor. And the rest is going to be our guys in front of this ridiculously hot crowd that's different and compelling. And we want to make, you know, I mean, I think Tony's out there with this idea. He, you know, Tony just wants to put on these great television shows, no matter how long it takes. I mean, it's just like, he doesn't want to compromise, mm-hmm. you know, like that show going 34 minutes over yesterday or Wednesday, I should say.
Did you see the rating?
No, I haven't got the rating yet.
Okay. I think 676 and a 0.12.
I would have hoped for better, but going so long probably hurt. But you know, it was down. Okay.
I saw the Russellnomics report.
Came out. All right. So then it's out. Yeah. I haven't seen it yet, but, I mean, I would have, I would have hoped for something. I would have hoped for something bigger, but when you go long, you're going to, you know, the part after 10 usually is going to go down significantly. So you're sacrificing that to a degree. So whatever. Yeah.
Other stuff on Collision. I saw Motor City Machine Guns came out. So they're with AEW now.
Mm-hmm.
What about the matches and the rest of the show?
It was a lot of really good wrestling, you know, and I thought it was a good show, easy to watch. Ospreay and Daniel Garcia was really kind of a hell of a match. Jack Perry and Nick Wayne, you know, and Andrade was really a hell of a match. You know, it's like, again, they're sprinkling a lot of these guys in that weren't there before. So, I mean, it was, for a Collision show, it was a good show. You know, very good show, I thought. I don't know how it'll do on an unfamiliar night, but, you know, that, you know, I mean, and I think that the focal point was to just get these, you know, and they got 8 matches out, is to get that Arena Mexico thing out there to where they have a card in Mexico City where those people are used to. I mean, the reality is they're used to getting the card 5 days before the show anyway. So they're getting the card 6 days before the show. And, you know, you don't need to announce it weeks ahead because they don't do it there anyway, weeks ahead. So for that thing, it's there and it's enough ahead for the TV viewers. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, last year's show was the biggest show they did all year. I don't know if it will be the same this year. Cause it's not the first time, but maybe the legend of last year's show helps it this year. Maybe it's overkill, you know, with 8 matches, but people won't go in with the overkill. They may come out of it with the overkill. So, well,
the Continental Cup, they explained what Moxley was alluding to on Dynamite.
Yes.
What so do you think of the whole idea?
It's different. You know, It's something to lead to matches every week on television starting this coming week, where not, and they won't be in the Wednesday, but for, I guess, on Saturday. But it's matches to build to a final match on the show in London, you know, for the Continental title, which I presume Moxley will be in. I think he should make the finals. And, you know, you just get unique matches. And I like the surprise element, you know, where you go in there and we don't have a bracket. Well, I think that they're going to announce the 16 guys. Like in the old days of wrestling, they had these tournaments that like made no sense, right? Because the promoters didn't even give a shit. You know what I mean? To have it make sense. Made no sense. Look at some of those old tournaments you've seen where, you know, they just don't. There's no way you can reconfigure them and have them make sense. This one, I know it will make sense, but you don't know anything. I think it's kind of cool, no bracket tournament. Everything's blind draw.
It's probably Tony Khan's dream to not have to put a bracket out. Yeah. So his brackets always come out so late. He's just like, hey, like we'll just do it right. I don't have to put this.
Yeah,
thing out.
Yeah, yeah. I know. And then hopefully we can. Nobody's hurt so bad that I don't have a way out.
I think the thing that I find to be the most interesting is there is. So they have the Casino Gauntlet, which is there's some mystery as to who's going to be on that or in that or how that's going to play out. And then you have this tournament, which there's going to be some surprise in the matchup. So they're going to be able to use their television to create some of the stories going into that pay-per-view for both of those matches. But I saw this one. Some folks were a little frustrated because they thought, you know, maybe if you were going to do another Continental Classic, that it would focus on the women, but they're doing Continental Cup and then Continental Classic later this year. And no, there hasn't been any information about whether or not they're going to do a women's.
Yeah, they could do another women's thing. I wouldn't do it in December though. At the same time, I think that one, and I think that you have to do the men in December. But as far as like another women's tournament, no, I mean, we had two of them almost at the same time because we had the Owen and we had the survival of the fittest type thing, right? You know, both going on simultaneously, which I thought was overkill having two. But I think that, you know, you could, I think that there's something with the women's tag team tournament too. But yeah, I don't know that I don't know that they have the depth of talent that will draw ratings enough to do a women's continental classic yet. But it could be something worth a try. And this one, I mean, you could have done this one with women, but I think that it's just, I think that it was just,
you probably have to wait for Tony.
Yeah. You got to also remember that when you're devoting this much time, it's gotta be something that you hope will do numbers. And I mean, one of the things is that, there are more guys there that do numbers than women, you know. And okay,
I understand that, by the way. And I want to kind of counter that, because there have been times in wrestling where the booker will say, well, in order to get this thing to the level that it needs to be,
we sacrifice.
Sometimes we need to sacrifice.
Well, that's the
short term.
How many times has he put women on last on these shows in the last few weeks? Often, because that's exactly what he's doing. If there is not a better example than Maya World of attempting to make a star and sacrificing short term, I don't know what is. And I hopefully it pays off in the long run. But he did not waver on that. When she was going out there after the Mercedes match and not getting reactions, he didn't go, oh, she's not getting reactions, maybe I won't give her the TBS title. He did, you know, and it's a decision. It's a decision that I'm going to guess the other side wouldn't have made. But, you know, he's making a lot of those decisions right now. Same thing with Bailey. I mean, with Kevin Knight, I should say. But, you know, he's making those decisions based on stuff like that to position people. And in the long run, a year from now, the hope is that it pays off. And at that point, yes, you go in there and have enough people to do all those matches and have people look forward to them each and every week. And the wrestlers being good enough to pull it off and all that. But I don't know that it's, you know, I mean, he is doing the ground, you know, he's doing the groundwork. He did bring, you know, do the tag team tournament, which is good. And he's got, you know, I mean, he's got the two teams, you know, in the women's tag team division. I mean, he's really focused on those two teams. They've mm-hmm. been kept apart for months. You've known this match is coming in London for God knows how long, and both teams just run over everybody. So that's the booking that was old school booking that nobody's doing. You know, I mean, others have been for Obafemi, where you just have a guy and it's like, this is our guy we're going to run over. Unlike with Bron Breakker, where they're sitting there going like, oh, we don't want the people to turn on him and think we're pushing him, so we're going to stop pushing him. And now where is he at? You know what I mean? He's so cold compared to what he was 6 months ago. And because
background noise for Austin Theory.
Yeah, I know.
Gosh, what was I going to say? I was going to say something else, but...
Yeah, he's not even on SummerSlam.
No, he's not. My hope is, like... Now, the part of the problem... it's not really a problem, but part of the thing with SummerSlam is I just don't know where everything is going after these matches, because there seems to be some sort of finality in the Roman and Seth and the Cody and Punk, like, unless they just get rematched again. But I mean, who's going to be the next contenders for the title?
I'm guessing Orton and Owens come in and do something to allow Cody to stay away from Punk for a while. I don't see them doing like a long program together. I mean, they could. And if it wasn't for those two names, I would think that they would, just because there's nobody, like, it's not like Priest or anyone else has really been pushed. Gunther's already had his run with Cody. I mean, I guess you could do Gunther with Punk, and they probably will at some point again. But it also was done at WrestleMania. So, so I think that that's it. But you're right in the sense that, like, even at Mania, when we were going in, I had like a kind of a good conception of where they were going out in the direction, even though a lot of stuff changed in from that. But here it's like, yeah, I don't feel long-term. I figured that after the Hell in a Cell, this is like Brock and Femi doing their real big match, right? The one that the memorable one, as opposed to the first two, which were explosive and short. I think that this one's got to be the big, the real big match to make Obafemi. And Brock's going to be the guy to do it and do it the right way. But then where does he go? Because he should go, you know, he should go against Punk next or Roman, you know, and Roman's obviously the better choice of the two for the way that it should be. And it's like, but you don't want to do that right away either. So yeah, I don't feel, I guess they're going to have to shoot a lot of angles this weekend and the weeks afterwards. Because yeah, I think they got to get a lot of new stuff started. You know, and again, you know, Rhea's not on the card, which is not their fault. She got hurt. So yeah, yeah, you're right though. I think that there's a, I don't feel there's a sense of long-term, you know, from that with AEW, there's been that sense of long-term until we get to Wembley. Now at Wembley, I think that they're going to be facing the same thing in the sense that all of these stories that we've waited for months and months and months to climax, that, now they've happened and you rematch some, you know, now, you know, we do know there's going to be Will and Moxley, but there's got to be, you know, there's got to be, that's one match for this, for the fall, but they got to start setting up all kinds of stuff for the fall, you know, cause everything is, you know, for months has been geared towards not like the last pay-per-view. There's a little stuff here and even Forbidden Door, but the ultimate, it's the long story to get to Wembley. And after Wembley, you know, it's, they're going to have to do a kind of, they're going to have to get stuff ready too. Yeah. That might be a little tough following that up. Getting ducks back in a row.
Triple Mania is headed to the MGM.
It was so weird when they booked the Luxor because it was like, I mean, there's so many arenas in Vegas that hold 5,000, 7,000, 9,000. And I would have thought that they would have run, like, if they weren't confident, you run, you know, the UNLV Cox Pavilion thing, that's 3, you know, you can sell that out. But they booked like a, they said 1600 seats. And I've had people who've been in that building and said, they don't even think it would have hold that, it could hold that many, but that was the number that I heard. Which I knew was way too low. And then the secondary market tickets, when they made the change, the lowest ticket to get in was over 700 on secondary, which is, you know, the hottest ticket in the history of wrestling, because the building was too small. So it made all the sense in the world. I don't know why they didn't do it at first. I was said there's a business reason for it. So I just assumed they wanted a nice small thing to sell executives, sponsors, TV people. You know, small, loud crowd, clean place, nice looking small place. And this is our product. You know, you want to get in on our product. But obviously, you know, which is the number one thing. It's not selling, you know, the number one thing is not selling tickets to this show. The number one thing is to make deals with the show. And maybe they are now confident enough that, hey, we can pack the MGM Grand. And from a standpoint of all of these people who were trying to sell this product on, packed MGM Grand is kind of like, oh, this is where like all these boxing matches and up until a few years ago, all these giant UFC fights were at the MGM Grand. This is like big time, not a little thing. Maybe they felt that at that point, now that we know we have more confidence in the brand being able to draw, that maybe this is better. I don't know. I mean, I've never had a long discussion. I mean, I had short discussions when they went to Luxor. I haven't talked to anyone since they made the move. You know, I mean, they did let me know immediately yesterday, you know, that this was the direction, but, you know, it wasn't like this is why, other than, look, we sold out the other place so quick. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, I mean, I get that, but I knew you were going to sell out the other place so quick when you announced it. You know, so but maybe they just have more confidence right now that they think it's a hotter product. And because of that, they're more willing to take the MGM Grand risk.
Takeaways from the, I guess they're trying to put out a new revised Ali Act.
I was really disappointed when I read it, because it's like all of the things that are the negatives are all still there. You know, Nico Ollie Walsh was talking about, he'd talked to these senators and that the act that went through the House would not pass in the Senate because he's been talking to senators. And it just feels like, it just feels like these senators are just, you know, it's like, I think because I was around when the first Ollie Act was passed, you know, which John McCain was the big supporter of, and it was, it did not have the ramifications to the business because people used ways to subvert it, that I think it was hoped for, but it was a positive in many ways. And I think now, I think because I was around when they did this, and it was a positive when they did it, that essentially taking away all of the things in that act that made it so important, because the rich guys don't want to play by the rules that changed. I just, I mean, it kind of is rubs me the wrong way in some ways. And one of, but the thing that maybe the most disappointing is watching these politicians just kind of, it's like the most basic of basic of basic. Why did this act pass in the first place? And why are we taking away all the stuff that was in there? If anything, they should have, you know, the big play should have been to get the act to cover MMA, you know? I mean, that should have been the direction that Congress should have done. But, and this is not like, you know, I mean, there was a little bit of, you know, the little bit of stall was because the, you know, the UFC 250 became Republicanized. So you had the Democrats being negative. But, you know, this is a bipartisan bill that they're going to get through. And, you know, there's some modifications and there's some good things in the bill. Don't get me wrong. Minimum pay is fine. The medical requirements are good, you know, but, the one good thing that boxing had was promoters not controlling their own world championships and, being able to, you know, basically, you know, do the UFC thing, you know, where you basically monopolize and keep the pay down, which UFC was so successful doing and has been. And then your, you know, one of the things that led to the first Ali Act was the idea that promoters were not paying talent fairly. They were withholding where the revenue was coming from. The talent didn't know they were being underpaid. So they changed these laws to have more, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, more transparency. So you can see where the money's coming from and you can see what everyone's making and they don't keep it from you. Although again, that's been, you know, that's been changed too, because people get around it with the fake purse thing. You know, like we've seen like Ronda Rousey, you know, got $2 million to fight and $6 million to promote the fight, you know, or whatever the number is, right? So it's kind of like, oh, well, we see 2 million, but she made way, way more. And it's, you know, there's tax reasons. And there's also, you know, keeping the real numbers away from the other fighters going, well, if she made this, maybe we can make this. But it's like, you don't see it. But now this, it's, you know, not requiring the disclosures, and just allowing promoters to control the thing. And again, short run, you know, boxing is stronger, not because the promoters are smarter. It's stronger because Turkey, you know, and the fights that used to not happen are happening because Turkey has so much money that he's throwing ridiculous amounts of money and controlling this thing. And it's fine as long as you've got Turkey and you've got Saudi Arabia, you know, wanting to use boxing for their own propaganda. The minute that ends, if it does, they may want to do it forever for all we know, but the minute that ends, we're going to be in a bad situation because my gut is Turkey's handpicked guys are going to win, which is Dana and Nick. And at that point, Dana and Nick are going to revert to Dana and Nick. We know what Nick does with WWE, and we know what Dana does with UFC. And congratulations to both of them for being able to do it. That's what a businessman does. I'm just wishing that for boxing that they didn't have to become WWE and UFC, because look at what those guys were making compared to what the fighters and the pro wrestlers were making. That was one of the big things. And not that the Ollie Act was the be all and end all of it, but by not being allowed to create your own world championships and only have your own fighters fight for the world championships and have that kind of sport like that we have in UFC, that has been why the fighters, the boxers, have been able to make so much money. And now you're taking that away and trying to put it in the hands of UFC promoters. You know, and Dana's a great promoter. They're very good promoters. And I think that, like, they've been kind of told, like, look, we can get into this business now, and we're going to, you know, we're going to have more big fights, and fighters are going to have access to more money than ever before. And short term, yes, but in the long term, you're taking away everything that got boxing salaries to where they were. You're taking it away. So and it's so simple. I think that's the most frustrating thing to me, is this is all so simple, but they're not living it. You know, they don't follow boxing pay versus pro wrestling pay, which is actually very good right now. It's actually awesome. But the reason it's awesome is because we've got real competition, and MMA pay, which is anything but awesome. All we hear is complaints about it. And you know, you want to make the boxing into MMA, which is really cool when you have this great, look at this great UFC where boxing so fragmented and messed up. And it's like, yeah, but that's, you don't really want, if your thing is really to benefit the fighters, if that's your real goal, and that's what the original Ali Act was all for the benefit of the fighters. And this new one is all for the benefit of one promotion. I mean, in a sense, it's a benefit to all promoters, and all promoters should go, oh my God, we don't have these restrictions, right? But in fact, almost every promoter, you know, is either against it vocally, like Oscar, but that's because he's afraid of what he's going to lose if it goes through. And the other ones are on the sidelines because they don't even know where this thing's going. They just want to stay in the game. So they're not even fighting it hard because, you know, they want to stay with whatever scraps Turkey may still give them. But, you know, so I think that's like the thing with me looking at it is like, you know, and again, I thought it was preordained that they were going to get it. Then it looked like that it may not be as preordained, but it is. And we're going to have, you know, boxing is going to turn into UFC. And to some fans, that's a good thing, you know, but for a lot of others and for the fighters, it's not a great thing.
Do you think Oscar and Eddie Hearn and Bob Arum understand to the depth that you understand and maybe pro wrestling fans understand about what the game plan actually is?
Yes, I think that they know.
Okay.
They also know that they're the ones who are on the verge of being cut out. You know, they're the Vern, you know, I don't know if they fully know they're the Vern Gagne's, but they're the Vern Gagne's. Yeah.
And I sense just reading between the, you know, just reading the stuff about Oscar and him kind of being edged out of being on the poster, mm-hmm. and he's probably pretty worried that Garcia may not be on
his team
anymore.
Garcia's probably going to leave him anyway when it's all said and done. He doesn't have that many fights left with him.
One, I think this is the last one, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. So, look, those other promoters know that in the big picture, they're, you know, they're 1984 pro wrestling promoters, you know, who may, you know, a lot of them still did well in 84 and even into 85, but they didn't do well by the end of the 80s. And I think there's things that can change it, you know, but it's essentially, it's other people, you know, putting money into boxing to fight it. Like DAZN is going to want to stay in. So if they get enough money, there'll be ways to stay in. I mean, I saw the thing in the last couple of days with PFL and MVP, you know, merging. You know, I wrote what my thoughts are on it. It's like the whole MVP thing, you know, the first show was a huge success, but it ain't because people want a second promotion, and it ain't because these guys are geniuses. It's like there's a Hulk Hogan, and when there's a Hulk Hogan, the rules change. But guess what? WCW, Hulk Hogan's not going to last forever. And in this case, I don't know. You know, Ronda, maybe she'll fight again. You know, maybe she got enough of a high of this, and, you know, she drew so well and made money and won quickly and all that, and she wants to fight this fight. Maybe she'll fight again.
But what does it really matter if you don't have whoever the new Ronda is.
There is no new
on the same card.
There's no new Ronda. That's the problem. There's no new Ronda. And Jake doing MMA, we've seen Jake fight for years, and Jake's been brilliant.
Didn't he say that because of his jaw from the Joshua fight that he may not be able to fight again?
He said that, but now he's talking like he's going to fight MMA in 2027. But I heard him fighting MMA for how many years now, and he never does. You know, and he wants to fight Nate Diaz, you know, who's like way smaller, you know, old, you know, and all that. Still might sub him, you know, I mean, but which would really be embarrassing because he's handpicking a washed up guy who still might sub him, but maybe not. But, you know, it's like he's already gotten about as much as he can out of that. I don't see big money stuff with Jake. I mean, he got the Tyson thing, which ended up being gigantic because of Tyson. The Joshua thing was so bad. You know what I mean? It's like, it's cool that he's been really, really smart in building his name and getting a lot of views, especially now that it's not on pay-per-view anymore, you know, going on Netflix and doing, you know, real big numbers and all, but he's going to run his course, you know? And again, I really like the job he's done with women boxing. You can't take that away from him. And you know, going in there and making the deal to get the Ronda fight when UFC, you know, blowballed them. I mean, that's what a good promoter does, but I don't know that it's enough to sustain. I don't feel that they have anything sustainable. You know, it's like when Scott Coker got big numbers using Hoist and Kimbo, you know, it's like, yeah, well and good. These are nice numbers, but until you can make your own Hoist and Kimbo, it's not sustainable. And in the long run, it wasn't sustainable. And that's the thing with a non-UFC MMA group is I don't, you know, you need, you know what, you know, maybe if you get Connor, but I think people are kind of tired of him and his appeal is going to run out. John Jones, maybe, but he's got so many fights left in his deal. You know, Francis Ngannou really doesn't mean anything. Like in the inside, people, oh, he's the lineal, this and that, doesn't mean anything. You know, Ronda means a lot.
Yeah.
But again, so you get one more Ronda fight, or maybe you don't. Maybe she loses and then that's it. That's the end of her career. I don't know.
All right. We have some questions that were sent in that I want to get to, and then we'll get out of here. So from my friend Mel from the Power Bombshell, she was wondering why AEW has never run a pay-per-view in Detroit, considering how people recognized how loud this crowd was for AEW. And she was just wondering, like, is this a...
AEW's had trouble getting dates at the Little Caesars Arena. But Tony on Wednesday after the show, like, I mean, he always kind of brings up pay-per-view anyway. You know, he did it in San Jose, and it's like, oh, yeah, they do it all the time. Then he ended up bringing a show in San Jose. But it's if he can get it, it's all about the ability, I think, for him, especially after the success of Wednesday's show. And to an extent, I mean, they were pretty hot yesterday too, but Wednesday was a great crowd and they packed the place and all that. I think they would do very well for a pay-per-view there. I think that it's just a question of getting a date with Little Caesars. You know, it's hard in some of these buildings because, you know, WWE has the before and after clauses, and sometimes they'll run enough just so you don't, you have a hard time sneaking in. And Tony only has a specific number of dates too. But I got the impression the way he said what he said, even though he says it in every city, he actually said Little Caesars Arena. He didn't just say, oh, we'd love to bring a pay-per-view here. He said Little Caesars Arena. So if he's mentioning the building, that tells me that he's thinking he's actually going to do it in that city. He's going to work on it, I think.
All right, from Alan, if the Paramount WBD case pushes AEW's next full rights negotiation into the option year, which outcome is actually more dangerous for AEW, a heavily indebted company looking to cut costs, or a weakened standalone WBD with fewer assets and less bargaining power? Is the option year a safety net, or does it merely postpone the same risk?
It postpones the same risk. Yes. You know, ultimately it's either they get another year at very good money, or the decision is made and they don't. or the decision is made that, you know, they're such a staple and they're doing well, and we're going to sign them for many more years. But, you know, if that's 2027 or 2028 when that happens, it's all the same, you know, other than it's a year later. But yes, you know, that's, it postpones, unless that they sign a new deal for like 5 years, in which case it's 100% vote of confidence and they don't have to worry about anything. And the odds that new management will come in and then cut them after that deal, it could still happen, but I don't think it will. But they may sit there and go, you know, I don't know. You know, it's like, yeah, we don't know who they're going to be talking to. Is it going to be the WBD people who are just going to go, we're going to, you know, if it's standalone, someone's going to buy it anyway. So it's like, the questions are still going to be there. Does that person who buys it, are they going to like wrestling? Are they going to think it's lowbrow? You know what I mean? What are they going to think of the ratings versus cost? Because it's not a sport, even though it has trappings of a sport. So it's like, you know, I don't know that one is better than the other. All have their dangers, and they're just going to be, you know, AEW is going to have the hand that's dealt to them. But as far as, you know, like WBD's got heavy debt. I mean, it's one of the things like I saw like Ariel Manuel when he wrote the thing, and it's just like, you've got these two companies, you know, Paramount and WBD, and they're both so heavily leveraged, but they can join together. And it's like, yeah, they can join together and be a company that's 10 times more heavily leveraged with that $111 billion deal. That's not going to make what it's so funny between what he wrote, which was so transparent, and not many people calling him on it. I mean, I have absolutely seen people, some people doing, but not many. And the other thing, you know, which is, you know, just the whole nature of all this, it's like, it's not, you know, you're, you know, I mean, it's just, it's crazy to me that all of Paramount Skydance as a stock was worth under $9 billion, and they gotta, if they don't make this deal, they almost have to pay all of it. I mean, it's like, From a business standpoint, okay, the Ellisons have so much money that they can handle it, but it's like these are so overpays and so bad business things, but you know, everyone's willing to do the bad business now, thinking that somehow it will make sense in the end, and maybe it will when everyone, you know, when, if we're the among the last men standing. But I mean, the other thing is like the lawyers for Paramount who are arguing the case for Paramount against the attorney generals and the Writers Guild and all that, their arguments are 180 degrees separate arguments than were made when, you know, a year ago, you know, about this whole situation. So it's people are contradicting themselves left and right, but about this one.
I do wonder what Larry Ellison really thinks of this situation, because
it looks bad.
Well, he very specifically, like, you know, he could have invested way more money in this thing if he wanted, mm-hmm. of his own money. But yes. He seemed to be not he didn't. That's why they brought in all of the other outside.
Yeah, that's why they brought in Saudi Arabia and Qatar and everything, just because he didn't put more money in. Yeah.
But I wonder.
But it's also $111 billion. That's so much money.
I wonder if he's just like, man, the kid is in over his head. What are we going to do?
Well, you know, I mean, I always remember Jerry Jarrett, you know, remember Jerry Jarrett was the one on that one. And, you know, being a father, and you're a father too, it's like, sometimes you don't make the prudent financial decisions if you want your kid to have what he really wants. And, you know, and you make decisions that you know better on, and maybe he's that, you know, he's got so much money and maybe he just wants to, his son to pull this whole thing off. But man, you know, it's like everyone involved, it's like the numbers are scary, but I think that like the idea is if we're the last man standing at the end in time, you know, we'll pull this off. Like a lot of investments in the last 20, 30 years that lost like tons and tons of money.
From Thomas, He sent this one in last week. AEW has shown strong increases lately in metrics like TV viewership and pay-per-view buys, while WWE has declined in some areas. Yet it still feels like AEW is very far away from catching them and matching how close they were in 2021. He said, what is holding AEW back currently from getting as close to WWE as they were almost 5 years ago? And what can they do to get back to that level?
I don't think they can do anything that they're not doing now. I think it's just a question of this is where it is. I think that some of the stuff early was new. You know what I mean? And also Vince was still running WWE, so it was a lot worse. With WWE being better, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that probably helped AEW now is that WWE isn't as good as it was. So I think what hurt them, I mean, if you look at the whole thing, when they started, WWE had a lot of cracks in the foundation. They were thinking that they knew and this other stuff couldn't work and they were going to kill it when it worked. And then they didn't kill it. And then there was actually like a little bit of a fight and AEW was kind of like this underdog group that was doing pretty well. And then the pandemic came and everything got weird. Then they came out of it and they had, you know, Punk Danielson and Adam Cole all at once. And that was great, great, great momentum. And then, you know, when they, you know, Danielson, you know, and Punk was the most important of the three. And the reality is that they lost Danielson, they lost Cole, but they've made a lot of new people, but they lost Punk, which was the biggest one of all. Mm-hmm. And he went to WWE. So that really hurt them. And now they're rebuilding, you know, from that low period. I think that they're rebuilding, but as far as like getting there, I think that WWE would have to suck and they don't suck, but that would be the best thing. I mean, I keep thinking that the day that Vince retired and Paul was put in charge, did I ever tell you? I think I probably did. I told you the minute that I heard Paul was in charge, what I did, right? You know the story, right? If you don't, I'll tell the story. I texted Tony and I said, this is actually going to be a fight now. Like, and I mean, a harder fight because you got Paul, you know, who's, you know, I mean, like Vince always wants to kill everyone and all that, but Vince was an, you know what I mean? Vince was old and you didn't really see the big picture. Paul just lost the fight. Now he's got the, you know, he was like running the, what's it, you know, he was running the military in Venezuela in a fight and got killed. And then he wakes up and he's running the military of the United States fighting against, you know, Mexico or something. And it's like, this is like a real fight from a guy who, you know what I mean? He's going to want to take guys. And, you know, I mean, what the first thing he did was call all these guys, you know, from Swerve and Malachi and everyone, you know, that he knows, you know, come back. It's all Vince's fault. I didn't want you to leave Regal. Right. And, you know, and that's what started disrupting everything. And, so yeah, for AEW to get, I mean, yeah, they have to, a good product will benefit them, of course. But that's a slow build. But it will give them, you know, a unique audience. I think they've done a good job with that this year, real good job. But as far as catching up with WWE, probably can't happen. But the only way it can happen is for WWE to really suck. And I don't think WWE is going to really suck. So I think that, like, I don't like anticipate the day that they're outdrawing WWE. And I know that there was a period where the numbers were pretty damn close. You know, they're both doing about 7 on average, right? 7-8. And now WWE is doing about 11 and they're doing 3-4. You know, 3,800 last I looked was the average. So, yeah, I don't see that gap meaningfully closing unless WWE sinks more.
They're also WWE's also taking care of all of their stars.
Yes. Yeah. They're paying everyone great.
So nobody, there's not going to be, I'm not going to say never, but more than likely a game changer is not going to be available.
The game changer are being taken care of really well. If you knew who Matt, the key guys, and there's like Roman Reigns, Cody, Punk, you know, Oba will be probably there.
Brock.
Rooming him to be Brock. Yeah. It's like they're making ridiculous money. They deserve it. Don't get me wrong. But it's not like, you know, like when Eric had it, when these top guys were making 600,000, 700,000 a year, and Eric could go give him a million and a half, even two. And it's like, I can't wait to get over there with a better schedule. It's like now they're making so much money, and you know, the ones that they cut, Tony can take, maybe there'll be a unique person, you know, like a Ricochet who they just didn't use well, you know, and Tony can use, but he's not, you know, he's a very effective character, and it was a smart move on his part. I mean, even who knows, right? You know, something, you know, maybe Bailey will help if she's going to do that. I have no idea what she's up with, what her decision is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But if they think that, if they, as in WWE, think that she will help, like did with like Natty, they will pay her enough to make sure she doesn't go. If that's her thing, she may be like Ricochet, where it's like, I'm just wasting my talent and I don't want to waste my talent. I like wrestling. But those are the, you know, those are the exceptions to the rule. But to get the Hulk Hogan's, number one, none of these guys are Hulk Hogan's, but to get the Randy Savages or the Bret Hart's, and there are a few of them. I mean, it's not like, you know, Eric, you know, greatly increased Bret Hart's money to come. And he did this, you know, even the turn down the first time, but these guys, he can't, they're paying so much. So it's the getting of the top guys name wise is much, much, much more difficult. They're not sitting there going like, oh, I'm underpaid. You know, some of them may think like Punk, who's sort of voiced this, that like, you know, God, they're making billions and billions. I may be underpaid, but God damn, like when I got in this business, did I think I would ever be making 1/10 of what I'm making? So how unhappy can I be here? Plus, you know, with Punk, it's the, you know, he doesn't want, you know, I'm sure he doesn't want to go back. There's so much bad. And Cody's the same thing. Cody's not going back. And Roman's never leaving. So it's like, you know, he's going to have to make his Kyle Fletchers and his MJFs, and he'll have some success and all that. But I mean, as far as like greatly closing the gap, I think that the thing that they got to go for is be the best number two you can be and do the best product that you can do and have it be a different product. But the idea of beating WWE, you never say never, and a lot can happen in 10 years. But right now, if I'm there thinking, it's not even in my thoughts of how do we beat WWE. It's like, just do the best that we can and hope the chips fall where they may, and hope that this next, we can negotiate this next deal and that'll make us even more solvent and we're here for life, you know, kind of like what the last deal did, but even on a bigger scale. So I think that's the basic gist, but getting, you know, can they increase their live attendance a little bit? But I think that they've come up with like a kind of a cool thing with these smaller, unique looking buildings. Like, it's like, I'm not so sure they want to go back into the NBA buildings and draw 6,000 in a 14,000 seat building, if they can even get that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it'll only be 4,500, you know, like they can go to SAP or Oakland Coliseum, but you know what? Isn't it like way better? You know, you've been to all of them for TVs. Wasn't San Jose like the Civic way better than all those buildings we went to before? Way better.
Yeah, it was way better, but the other building would be the best if they could ever get into that one, San Jose State.
Well, they could probably fight. And that's a nice medium-sized building. Yeah, yeah. They could probably maybe try to get into that because WWE did get into it and they don't run it at all. But like the San Jose Civic's got that historic thing. San Jose Civic's proven to be a great building for New Japan and for AEW. So, you know, like Sacramento Memorial, you know, like that's proven to be a great building for them. So those size buildings, you know, and selling them out for AEW is... I think that's a positive, and I don't know that I would change that, especially now when the live gate's not as important as the TV feel. The TV feel is so important because your money's from TV.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go out there, and if we don't draw 5,000, it's not worth it. You know, they can go and draw 2,200 or 2,500 and have the right feel, and it's a great TV show.
All right. Let's end with this question. This one also came in last week, and it was... I think the reason is because he was wondering about the push for redemption. But he says, it's from David. I'm a mid-30s guy who has been an AEW fan since before it even started. I don't know how you can actually be a fan of AEW since before it started. And up until the past year, I'd never missed a Dynamite. Also a big sports fan. And with my job, I'm constantly listening to podcasts or watching shows from The Ringer, Barstool, ESPN, etc. AEW used to send their talent to these shows as a way to promote, and it was always great. In the last 2 years or so, it seems that the only talent that would go on any of these shows that aren't wrestling related was MJF, and that was for short spurts. Has Tony decided this is as far as AEW will ever go in the post-punk era and no longer encourages talent to promote the company? On the shows I listed, WWE wrestlers are constantly on them promoting their company.
That may be because they get so many WWE guests and there's that the unspoken agreement, you know? It could just be that, you know, right now media, like that type of media that you're talking about is very access media oriented. And because of that, you know, WWE's the big fish and everyone knows, you know, credit to them. Everyone knows that if you don't play ball with them, that you're not going to get the access to them. And maybe that's just more important to these people. If like you had these media things that were so big and WWE didn't matter to them and you know, whatever. I mean, I know, you know, I think Ariel likes MJF and he'll take AEW guests to a degree, but, you know, he'll obviously Tony could go on there pretty much anytime. But he's also kind of a big fan where some of the other ones, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's, pushed on people. I mean, I see Tony doing podcasts I've never heard of all the time and some big ones, you know, and some big ones. But I think that like a lot of those ones that you talk about, if they would take him, I would think he would do them. I would think, you know, some of the other ones are not as keen on doing lots of media and maybe they should be. Maybe there should be more of a, I mean, not even maybe. There should be more of a push to get people other than MJF who loves it, you know, out there, you know. I mean, and they've some, I've seen a lot of local market stuff with Kyle Fletcher. But at the same time, it's like to a lot of those people, is Kyle Fletcher a big celebrity? No. Kenny, maybe Moxley to a degree, but they may not, push for it as much. And maybe they should be, pushed a little more. I don't know.
I think also Tony understands what he wants to push and he's going to hit all of those beats no matter what. He will force those beats through in, even if it means maybe not answering the question exactly. And
Tony's a lot better. I saw, what was the show I saw? I saw it on YouTube, but it was like a sports economics thing. And they talked a lot more than just wrestling. They talked soccer and football and TV and a lot of other things. And it was like a 30-minute thing. And I was like very, you know, I was very impressed by Tony on that show in the sense of, you know, more than Levesque. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's like Levesque's always, you know, defensive and a little, you know what I mean? It's like I just thought that he's really, you know, from when I think of the very first podcast that we did with him to
we
today,
reminded him about that.
When you brought that up when we saw him the last time. Yeah. It's like he is, you know, he has got his thing down. He knows what he wants to say. He's got his thing. He comes across very confident. You know, he's not going to take shots at anybody. I mean, it's like there's people, you know, like this is the time that he could get a lot of receipts if he wanted to. And I think that it's sort of like, I don't, you know, I'm living great. I don't need receipts. Because there's a lot of people who spent a lot of years on him, you know, and you know, and I bring up, you guys were proven you were wrong at every turn in the long run. And, you know, people are mad about that. It's just the reality, but he doesn't, you know, he doesn't feel the need to do it. And he's not on I take that back. He did the coach show, you know? So he wanted to do that one for whatever reason. You know, as far as like, yes, they should push, for their top guys to do more media interviews, but a lot of the media really doesn't want to, that they don't want to hire WWE, and that's a reality. And that's not WWE, you know, is WWE telling people if you put AEW guys on, we're not going to help you. I don't know. I've never heard anyone tell me that they've done that. I think that there's an implication in some people's heads that they will, and therefore, or that you have to take sides, and therefore you're going to take the sides of the top guy. There's so many complicated things that go on in that. But yes, I do think that other than MJF, I think that some of those top guys need to go there, and they need to know the battle statement, and just get themselves over as stars in non-wrestling things. That is something that will help AEW, is being seen, you know. But can they, you know, like look, they can't get guys on the Tonight Show very often. You know, and that's just how it is. If they could, they would, you know. I mean, that's a big advantage WWE has of being on Netflix and being WWE with its 40-year history of being mainstream-ish. And AEW doesn't have that. AEW is the secondary group, just like PFL. You know what I mean? If you're looking at whatever, you know, this is the real comparisons is WWE and UFC and their monsters, right? And there's AEW and PFL. And when you look at it that way, it really tells you what a fantastic job AEW's done. But they do have a big advantage in the sense of they have more of the best wrestlers than PFL has of the best fighters. And there are enough wrestling fans who are aware of that. Whereas with MMA fans, there really aren't enough. And so that's the advantage of being in the wrestling space. There is that opening because WWE doesn't have everyone. And there's also, you can also do better quality matches than WWE does in pro wrestling. Whereas in fights, you know, it's all about star power. And unless you made a name in UFC, you're not going to have the star power. You're Jake Paul, who's unique. So it's like, it is easier for AEW to be more successful than PFL.
The other thing is Moxley and Omega and guys like that, who you would want to see out there, they're not really speaking in sound bites necessarily. And so maybe they could start doing that, but I don't know if I want to see John Moxley remind me when the next pay-per-view is, or remind me to watch Dynamite. I want to see him.
They're different personalities.
I want to see him talk about something, you know, pretty interesting and important. And that's why they're good on this. Like when we talk to them, because they can kind of get deeper into their element and what makes them good at their craft.
Yeah. You know, do those people, I don't know, do they want Kenny Omega to go out there and be The Miz? I don't know that anyone wants that.
Which is why MJF is so fantastic, because he's awesome at it.
He can do both.
Yeah. You know, the one that I thought about, though, you know, who'd be absolutely amazing, and they, you know, I would push her out there, as Willow. Like, she's just so genuine.
Yeah. Yeah. More than Mercedes.
Well, because Mercedes has to play the heel shtick, just like at that press conference, which was so kind of frustrating to watch, her having to do the, oh, you media, you bunch of losers, this and that. Like, I don't want to see her do that in a mainstream way. I would want to see Willow just be her personality and maybe even talk about some of the important things that she recently talked about, like the depression and missing birthdays, and then her having to say, okay, you know, other people have to do this as well. Like, that stuff is really compelling. And I think she would do a good job out in front of the media like that.
She's an interesting character. She's just not a big celebrity, but man, she's one, you know, she really was great on Wednesday, I have to say.
Awesome.
And a lot of it was the fans. They do have something there. You know, it's like, you know, she's got a lot of positives. She really does. The way she comes across so likable. And she's, you know, she could tell that story that she told. Man, she came off so likable. And that's hard in professional wrestling when they're, you know what I mean, always trying to pick at you and everything like that at everything you do. And you're right. I think that they should try. I mean, you know, pitch her to more people. You know, it's she's good. She's potentially great.
All right. That's it from here. So SummerSlam content on this website. over the weekend. I know you're off, or you're out actually, but you'll be back on Sunday. And Brian and Vinny and all the shows that he's doing will have folks covered on SummerSlam. So, all right, that is it from here. For Dave, I am Garrett. To everyone, thanks for watching and listening.